Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with a woman whose writing skills and knowledge of the ordinary skincare range knows no bounds, Faith Richardson.
Truly a connoisseur of them both.
I mean, knowledge of the ordinary will probably serve you as well in life. I really need to overhaul my skincare routine.
It's truly been life-changing, and considering how like cheap they are, it's literally phenomenal. Like that red acid peel thing, I was like afraid to use it. I bought it took me like 3 weeks to summon up the courage to use it, but it's literally life-altering.
What is going to help me with my massive pores?
I use this thing called, I can never fucking pronounce it, niacinamide or something like that. Something of that description, because I get really big like pores, and then they get blackheady. And this like literally like cleans them all out, and my pores and blackheads look so much better. So genuinely, I would say that.
Can you send me the direct link to that? I mean, already yeah. The fact that you can't pronounce it makes me trust it implicitly.
That's the thing. All their bottles have these like super scientific names on it. It's not like, oh, this beautiful like pore cleanser. It's like niacinamide plus 2% acid thing. And I'm just like, fine, sold, done. It sounds technical.
They've really gone down the pharmaceutical kind of branding line.
Yeah, 100%. But it does work. It's so good. Although I've been super lax with my skincare. Like at the start of lockdown, I was like on it like 10 minutes every morning, 10 minutes in the evening, like face masks and shit. And now I'm literally like, oh, it's 1 o'clock and I still haven't even brushed my teeth yet.
Yeah, because I think part of you is just like, I don't even know when I'm going to see the light of day. Yes. So does it really matter the state of my pores? But it exactly. Does. We should be preventive.
Exactly.
Preventative. Yeah, we should be doing that. It's always my Belgian friends that have a go at me for not being good with skincare.
Oh, really?
Because they're always like, oh, you English, you love to spend so much money on your makeup, but you don't understand that all makeup in the world is not going to make up for bad skin. And it's true.
It's so true.
You need to have like a good canvas before you start painting on it.
Absolutely. And I think it was one of those things, but I've always been like super lax about it. I'll kind of like have a spurt of like, I'll do 3 days before I take really good care of it and do a face mask after a bath and then be like, yeah, that's right. And then be like, why isn't my skin perfect? It's like, oh, I'm doing that once a month.
So kind of somewhat adjacent to this skincare conversation is I have been working out for the past week and a half.
Oh my God, this is huge for you.
Possibly 2 weeks, mainly because this is so depressing, but I get home around 5, 6-ish because I don't have much to do at work because business is so dead. Mm-hmm. And then I just have this evening to fill. I don't want to stare at a screen because I stare at a screen all day. I stare at a screen to socialize.
Yeah.
I don't want to just lie in bed and read because then I'm still kind of putting strain on my eyes and then I fall asleep really fast. So I needed something to do. So I started out just being like, oh, I'll just do some stretches. And, you know, that's probably like good for my back because I'm like hunched over so much at the minute as well.
Yeah.
And then that fully kind of disintegrated into a bit of cardio, kind of just dancing around my kitchen. And then that's now kind of almost become like a bit of a workout plan where I've been doing about 45 minutes a day. And then yesterday I was getting changed and I was like, oh, my God. There are some abs forming. I don't know what to think because it hasn't been that long that I've been exercising and I've got like definition in my stomach. And
so incredible. I think probably because you're so naturally thin as well though, so you probably just have like an exceptional metabolism, so it will just be like abs already, which I'm incredibly jealous of.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I've always had a relatively flat stomach, but then I wasn't anticipating having muscles on top of it. And there is already a bodybuilder called Louise Rogers. So like, market is saturated, mate.
I am truly so jealous. Like when I started doing like weightlifting and things like that to lose weight, it took me like 6 months to sort of lose the initial weight that I wanted to lose. And then I was like, oh, another 6 months after that, and I had like the merest shadow of an ab, and all I would have to do was like look at a bit of pizza and they would just like dribble back up and die.
Yeah, because you were really, really into the weightlifting and stuff. How have you coped with that over lockdown? Because you've been like,
I really miss it because it's really the only form of exercise where it makes me feel like I've actually achieved something at the end of it. Like everything else, I just feel a bit tired and a bit like, eh. But we have a weights bench in Greg's office that we pilfered from our old flat. Like the last tenant had left it there. And when we moved out, we were like, well, we're obviously taking this with us. But we've mostly just started doing like yoga and Pilates. And although I've like gained quite a bit of weight over lockdown because I haven't been weightlifting and like walking to the gym and stuff like that, like it's been really nice to exercise for like my brain. I just literally feel like so much like nicer kind of taking the physical element off it, because obviously I've said before, like, I kind of struggle a lot with like getting too obsessive and then getting too lax, and I find it really hard to find a balance. So this has kind of forced me to just be like, everything is fine, I just need to move. But I do miss it. I'm like itching for the gyms to open again.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's what I like about what I'm doing at the minute, is I've kind of just got a routine where I'll do two songs of warming up and stretches. I'll do five songs of like generally kind of cardio. I'm doing like 10 squats for each song, so I guess like 50 squats.
That's really good.
I have stretch marks. I have stretch marks on my thighs. I'm quite excited about it.
Oh my God, I love that.
I'm like, ooh, something's happening. And then I just do two songs of like cooling down, and then I feel like I'm not going to get too weird about it, because
yeah,
by that point I have to stop anyway with my chest, because most of the time I'm just like in pain.
God, yeah, please don't but, like just drop dead.
Yeah, like literally if I don't show up to a podding appointment, like please just do a welfare check on me.
If I don't hear from you like 3 days in a row, I'm gonna check on you.
Yeah, please do, because that is actually one of my fears about living alone, is like choking on my dinner one night or something and no one finding me for like months.
Oh no, I'm sure people would realize after a day you'd be I mean, it'll be too late, but even
though. Yeah. Oh, that's fine then. That's reassuring.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's good. I've noticed that, like, I feel better if I'm doing it as well. So that's just my main thing, is, like, I hate to admit, but exercise is a mood booster.
Oh, honestly, it's the biggest bane of my life, where I'm like, I know it makes me feel better. I really don't want it to.
Yeah, and you just don't want to actually get over the hump and actually go and do it.
Yeah, it's so hard.
So we just wanted to very briefly talk about something regarding the episode last week. So last week we commented very briefly, I would say, on the Stassi firing, and we knew that it was obviously quite a contentious topic. But we did feel it would be wrong to not address it completely, given the nature of what she and Kristen did to Faith, given the current climate, you know, given the fact that people are having those conversations at the moment. We didn't want to not talk about it at all. And we did have someone point out on our Instagram that some of our language didn't really do the severity of the situation justice. And, you know, we agree. I think more or less as soon as we read that comment, we were like, oh, yeah. You know, you're right. And we kind of realized. So we always would want people to enter into a dialogue with us, share their thoughts in an open way. You know, we certainly recognize that we are outsiders to the situation on the ground in the States. I mean, we have kind of a basic knowledge of the States, but obviously, you know, we're not living there. We're not kind of involved in everything day to day. So we understand that, you know, we're coming from a different place, it's an international perspective, and we're also coming from a place where we are privileged. You know, we don't make any secret of the fact that we're ex-private school, you know, we're two white women. So we do just ask that you take what we say with a pinch of salt. You know, this podcast is not something we professionally produce. It's something that we do for our own enjoyment. And while we don't want to stray away from the big topics, and we do want to do those conversations that are happening in the zeitgeist justice, we are also not kind of positioning ourselves as experts in any of this, and therefore, you know, we are liable to making mistakes. We might kind of be phrasing things in a way that downplays things a little more than we should have. And so, you know, all we can do is do our best. We want to speak freely and openly, and we're certainly always open to constructive criticism like what we received last week. So, you know, thank you for pointing that out. Thank you for having a really nice kind of respectful tone with us, and just kind of wanted to point that out and to say, great.
Perfect.
So on to Potomac. Is it good to be back?
It is good to be back. I've missed Potomac. I feel like I'm already missing Sunday's episode. Like, I don't know what we're how it's going to be when we have like 2 weeks away from Roni, but I'm really glad that we've got Potomac to keep us going.
I know, I feel the same. I kind of feel like there's a gap in my calendar, even though my calendar has had nothing in it since March. I mean, I'm still carrying it round out of a sense of duty, but I have like 2 half-an-hour meetings over the coming months scheduled, and that's it.
I know, I've literally been the same, but I find like I've got like a little Trello list, so I kind of try to keep track of everything that I should be doing each day. But I just find that I'm checking it less and less frequently because I'm just like, nothing's changed. I'm literally scheduling in watching like Potomac and things. Just feels like I've got some sort of stability and normality.
I mean, that's a task to complete. Yeah,
exactly.
You know. Just because it's reality TV doesn't give it any less standing in the list of priorities.
Well, absolutely.
So we open up the episode at a flight school.
I mean, so this was already just so wild because I would not have Karen pegged as somebody who wanted to be a pilot. I got more of a charter a private jet vibe from her.
I have such a soft spot for Karen.
I do as well. Do you know, it's genuinely the first couple of episodes I was like, she really grated on me. And like, I just found her kind of like uppertiness quite off-putting, but honestly I've warmed to her so much, and I think she's got such like a secret sense of humor.
I think she does too. I think your opinion of her might change as the seasons go on, because it's been a while since I've seen Potomac, so mm-hmm. You know, this going back and rewatching still feels quite kind of new to me. I have a feeling that over the next couple of seasons she kind of loses that fun side a bit.
Oh no.
But I feel like at this point she's still a bit like tongue-in-cheek, and I just love that she wants to learn to fly a light aircraft. To me, it's such a serious flex as a hobby.
I know, that was all I could think as well. I was like, I love that she's just like, oh, my daughter's literally barely left the house, and she's like, right, what can I get like started on doing, what hobbies can I do? And like, I love this for like, not just for her, but I love this like as a sort of theory for parents everywhere, that they kind of, once their kids have, you know, become independent, left the house and stuff, like I love this notion that they then go back and do all these other things.
Yeah, I like that it's her logical answer to empty nest syndrome. Like, well, my daughter's gone, guess I might fuck about and fly a plane.
Yeah.
But it is like a second life, I think. My parents have a very different life than they did when I lived with them.
Yeah. My parents are kind of the same. I mean, there's kind of obviously areas that have changed. Like, my mum set up her own business and my dad's like retired and things like that. And they kind of have like a very like calm, like pleasant kind of a life. But I always get the sense that there's always stuff where they're just like itching to go and do some kind of traveling or exploring and that sort of thing.
I always worry about the traveling thing because I'm like, do I want to wait until I'm retired to travel, or do I want to like try and do it now? I already decided I didn't want to do a gap year, because to me, I'm like, if I'm going halfway across the world, I'm not staying in a hostel. Like, that's just not me. I would rather do things spread out over the course of 15 years, but be able to get like lovely hotels at every stop.
Yeah, this is very much me as well. Like, I kind of, obviously, like, I did my degree at uni, like, much later in life and stuff. But even before that, I was like, I don't want a gap year kind of thing. Like, when I travel, I want to do it kind of, like, not, like, luxury, because there ain't no way that I'm affording, like, 5-star hotels. But, like, in a way where it's, like, I feel like I can relax and kind of enjoy a good balance of culture and, like, touristy stuff and kind of get a really well-rounded aspect of it. Whereas I think if I'd done a gap year, it would have been really like heavy on just being like student-y, drinking, you know, that kind of thing. And I just feel like it wouldn't have been something where I'd have got a true experience of the place.
We must be the only people with these accents that never took a gap year.
I know. Truly, there is not one pair of elephant print harem pants hanging in my wardrobe.
Or the mandala wall hanging.
Yeah.
With fairy lights. Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I, you know, no disrespect to anyone who does, but I don't need to find myself.
Yeah, I think that was it for me. Like, I always love the idea of traveling by myself. It's never something I've really got to do before. Like, I've never really had the money until recently. And then it's kind of like trying to find the balance of turning around to Greg and be like, oh, by the way, I want to go away, but like by myself. So I love the idea of traveling alone, but I don't feel I need to do some kind of like eat, pray, love world tour kind of thing. More like I want to be left the fuck alone for a week and like eat and drink pasta by myself.
Well, this is exactly what I did in Italy. It was perfect.
It does sound like so relaxing though, because like classic like introvert thing, like being left alone to my own devices is like the best thing in the world.
I think what's nice about traveling alone in the Med as well is like people are friendly and open enough that like if you want to get into conversations with people, you can.
Yeah, so you don't ever feel like you're completely just like isolated.
No, you know, like the waiter will talk to you, you know, there will be like you can certainly open up dialogues, which maybe you couldn't do if you were just traveling in the UK. Like, yeah. Imagine being at a restaurant and just talking to like the person in the seat next to you. It just wouldn't happen.
Absolutely not, no. But I mean, I also slightly prefer that, because when strangers try to talk to me, I just immediately recoil and I get like, please don't, please, I can't, it's too awkward. Like, I don't know what to talk to you about.
Yeah, it depends how interesting the person is, which yeah. In the local pub, like, they're generally not. So Karen is fully shocked at the female flight instructor, and I feel like sometimes she does show her age a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is kind of one of those things, like, I love that she was, like, happy about it rather than being like, oh, a woman can't fly a plane kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I did, yeah, it was such, like, a reminiscent of, like, old school thing of, like, a female instructor? Oh, my, you know?
I mean, it's still so rare to get on a plane and to have a female pilot. My mum's best friend from school is a British Airways long haul pilot. She's like one of the only women on the fleet. It's so incredibly underrepresented.
I was going to say, you know, thinking about it now, it's not really something I ever noticed, but thinking about it, I don't think I've ever been on a flight with a female pilot before, which is just sad and tragic.
Yeah, I have a handful of times, but yeah. Like not enough times that I wouldn't, like, I still notice it. Do you know what I mean? Because yeah. It sticks out to you as something that's unusual.
Yeah, we need more women pilots, guys.
But also, like, pilot culture is so abrasive to women. Like, I remember with my ex when they were doing the training and, you know, they were basically told, like, the air hostesses are there to, like, cater to your every whim and, like, he was at a small airline before where, for example, the pilots used to carry the air hostess's bags for them and stuff. And then they got to like the big boys and it was just like, oh, yeah, you know, they're basically there to like service you.
Oh, God, I hate that kind of culture.
This is why whenever anyone's like, oh, if you want to see the world, like, why don't you just be in it? And I just like, no, I wouldn't do it even for a year or two, because I could never just like serve men like that. Even if they are in uniform.
I know exactly what you mean. Like, there was a couple of times where I was kind of having a bit of a misguided, like, I don't know what I want to do with my life or kind of what direction I want to take, and I was just like, I know I want to travel, and it kind of crossed my mind where I was like, oh, like, I know a few people who've been air hostesses and things, and like, is, you know, so you get to do a couple of days in so many cities. But yeah, all the bits like in between, it's like, no, I just want to be on a flight to this place. I don't want to be like serving people and like tottering up and down and like being disrespected, as so often happens to like flight, like especially female flight attendants, which I just think is so horrendous. So yeah, I was like, that's with
me. Drunk passengers and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And especially because like I've seen so many people where it's like, even just in the like the gates and stuff before you board flights, like when it's not even been your flight, but like drunk stag dudes going to like Marbella, or like Magaluf or whatever, and I just sit and watch them from like the smoking bit of a gate, just like, God, I'd kill myself if I was on that flight.
Literally every time I fly to Dublin, it's the same story.
Oh yes, Dublin's really bad for it. And when I used to live in Bristol, when I would like fly home, it was always the same, and it would be like the entire airport would just be like various stag dudes going places, and it was like, oh. Get away.
marauding hordes.
Yeah. Their novelty t-shirts.
Oh, they love a novelty t-shirt. Oh, yeah. So Karen's talking about Ashley, and this made me laugh. She goes, she's 26. Her frontal lobe just came together last year.
Oh God, this really got me as well. I was just like, oh, is this my excuse? Can I just get away with things now?
And Giselle admits that in spite of herself, she does like Ashley, which you can tell kind of pains her to say.
I know, you can tell that she was so hell-bent on being like, no, I don't want to like her. I don't want to get on with her. Like, and you can tell that it's truly painful for her to say, like, hey, do you know what? I think she might be okay.
And then we cut to Casey, the kids, the sexy nanny at a playground. And Ashley wants to see what the realities of childcare are like. So she comes to the playground to basically watch a paid employee push Katie's three kids on the swings, like, single-handedly.
So this is exactly what I thought as well. It's like, firstly, she isn't, like, because of the amount of money and presumably they are going to have, like, nannies and things like that, like, it's not a true representation of, like, really raw motherhood. Do you know what I mean? It's not like three screaming kids. You're the only one there that can sort of provide for them and get them to school on time and all this kind of stuff. And it was just very much, let me and Katie sit on the swings and have a chat while the nanny pushes them on the swings and talks to them.
Yeah, I've been trying to talk my friend out of having four kids this morning. Well, not talk her out of it, but I've been trying to make her see, like, how difficult that's going to be in practice.
That is a lot of children. Like, obviously, Greg is the oldest of six.
Oh, my God.
And they're all boys. So I truly...
No!
I know. I don't know how his mother coped.
That's pretty intense.
And there's only, like, so what? Greg will be 34 this year, and his youngest brother is, like, 23. So there's literally, like, an 11-year gap between all six of them. So his mother was basically just relentlessly dealing with teenagers and babies at the same time.
That's amazing.
I know. I genuinely don't know how she did it.
I can't believe that I was an only child and still felt like I wasn't getting enough attention. With my mum, who was home full-time as well.
Oh my God, honestly, same. Like, when I was, like, younger, my mum was always, like, a full-time architect, but my dad was, like, a computer technician, and he did, like, photography and stuff as well. So he had, like, a really flexible job where he was home all the time, and he would literally just need to, like, nip out to do a job or whatever and come back again. He would always, like, pick me up from school, and I was always like, there's just never enough attention, guys.
That's why we're so awful now.
Truly terrible, demanding human beings.
So Ashley feels like her preconceived notions of the ladies are being challenged, particularly after their evening of drinking in the whiskey basement. And then we go back to the flight school and we see that Karen has brought some holy water to anoint the plane, just in case. And the flight instructor is just standing there and just doesn't know what to think.
I mean, that, like... like, flight instructor looked truly, I don't know if horrified was the word, but you could tell that not once in her God knows how long of teaching flying had a person whipped out a plastic bottle of water and been like, I prayed over this, and then proceeded to just dump it over the plane.
I know. And then I love that later in the episode, she's like, we had to swap the plane out. Soz Karen. Soz Kaza. I feel bad for Karen now because her name is being, like, dragged through the dirt. It's part of this whole, like, boomer versus millennial.
I know, Karen's
culture war.
Such a cultural reference point now, hasn't it?
But you also know that Karen has some vaguely Karenistic tendencies.
Oh, you know that she's been the person at the front of a queue in, like, a retail place, like, demanding to speak to a manager before. You just know it.
So back at Ashley in the playground, one of Katie's kids just goes totally ham on Ashley and is doing, like, Cirque du Soleil style gymnastics in her arms. And we learn that Ashley is hosting a birthday party, a cat-themed birthday party.
I mean, look, we're both cat people. So in theory, the idea of a cat-themed party could be excellent.
Yeah, but you just know that it's going to be like the slutty cat Halloween costume.
Oh, 100%.
Amplified.
And I must admit, later on the episode, I was genuinely disappointed that like nobody committed to that theme.
Yeah, you know that that was a bit of like a backhanded...
Yeah.
...statement they were making.
Yeah, and I did feel bad, because there's nothing worse than when you get really excited about a theme and you go all out and then nobody else really makes the effort and you're just like, well, now I look like a dick, so thanks, guys.
I hate that, but then also, I don't care. It's not my fault that other people are going to be boring.
Yeah, I always have this with Halloween. Like, I always kind of, like, have an initial worry, like, oh, am I getting, like, too dressed up, or am I going, like, too involved or whatever? And then I think about it, I'm just like, I don't fucking care, because I know I'm gonna look great, so if everybody wants to just stare at me, that's fine.
Worst thing ever is to half-ass a costume,
isn't it? Like, you either go all in or don't bother. You cannot half commit to something.
Truly. So Ashley confesses at this point that she's googled the ladies after meeting them, and she found some information out about Robin. She says that her and Juan are declaring bankruptcy.
So I have so many mixed feelings about this. Like, firstly, I don't think Googling people is a heinous crime. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, I Google, like, people all the time. Like, I'm not going to lie, Googled Greg when I first, like, started going out with him, because I knew he was a tattooist and I wanted to see all the stuff that he'd done. And I think it's just one of those things, like, I think especially if you have friends or acquaintances or whatever that are in sort of, like, fairly high up places, I think it's not necessarily that you're digging for dirt, but I always feel like I'd want to know a bit about them. Like, if I'm going for a job interview, I look that person up on LinkedIn because I want to know where they went to school and what they kind of did their degree in and what jobs they'd had and stuff, to see if there's like common ground where I could sort of talk to them about.
Oh, but if you start talking to anyone, even especially like me, most recent context on a dating app, and you're not Googling people prior to like properly meeting them or whatever, like it's a safety thing sometimes as well.
100%. And I think Ashley even sort of alluded to that, like, I need to know who I'm going to be hanging out with and who these people are. And I think if you're in a position like that, like her, where you have a lot of money and that sort of thing as well, I think it's just sensible to know who the people around you are.
I totally don't blame her for doing it. I mean, this to me is a good housewife, right? She knows what her remit is to get in there and to stir some shit up.
Exactly.
So, okay, she Googled, we would all Google. It is intentionally messy to bring it up on camera, but that's the whole point of being a real housewife.
Well, exactly. So this is kind of what I wrote down in my notes as well. It's like, I don't agree with her bringing something that's that kind of deep and personal up on camera, just because I feel like people's finances, and especially when it's like in such a negative way and kind of like declaring bankruptcy thing, like, yeah, public record, but I don't think it's something that should be, like, she should have taken upon herself to bring to the table.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? But again, yeah, it is Real Housewives, and it is the intention of being messy like that.
Like, I think she kind of knew that it was going to cause drama, and I think that's why she did it. I'm not saying it's, like, morally right, but I'm saying that she knows it's going to be good TV.
Oh, 100%. There is no question in her mind that it's going to get her a lot of screen time doing this.
So apparently they have $25 in their bank account. And like, I never understand how bankruptcy works. Like, people who go bankrupt never seem to actually do so. Like, they seem to always bounce back. They still always have these big houses, these fancy cars. Or like, is that just what it looks like on TV? I mean, I remember when the Giudicis were like facing bankruptcy, and like, I just don't understand it from like a financial perspective.
No, I don't either. And this is the thing, like, it's obviously it's not really something I've ever really like heavily looked into, but I'm the same. Like, I always thought that if you're declaring bankruptcy, it meant that you got like your house repossessed, any business stuff like repossessed, you got all your money taken from you, and you had to literally just start again from scratch. Like, that was always my understanding of it, but it doesn't seem like that's what actually happens.
Yeah, I don't understand like the legal mechanics of it. No. I mean, we see obviously like Robin goes to work later in the episode. They're obviously both still like working and earning.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it's like, so I kind of don't understand at what level you declare bankruptcy. Like, I've been living in an overdraft before, but I've not declared bankruptcy, obviously. So it's like, I don't understand, like, at what point during the totem pole of it, you kind of go, right, we need to do this.
Is it maybe because they have assets? So, like, they part own the house, but they still have outstanding payments on the mortgage? Like,
that could be it. Debt? Yeah.
I mean, debt is something that I'm lucky enough to not be in, but I also take a lot of pains to, like, not spend money where I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess it could be that as well.
Yeah, I would assume that's probably something to do with it. Yeah, maybe it's if you've got, like, assets or loans or, like, business, like, loans and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that seems more likely to me.
Because, yeah, I mean, that house is, like, still glorious.
I know. Like, I would give my left arm to live in a house like that.
I know.
Potomac is such square footage porn.
Isn't it? I mean, just the space of everything is, like, exceptional.
I can't even imagine having, like, room like that.
I know. And, like, even just, like, the grounds around it as well. Like, none of the houses feel like they're on top of each other or anything. It's truly, like, I feel like it's literally just, like, some kind of, like, weird, magical, like, blip in the Matrix where it's, like, true perfection lies.
So then we go over to Charissa's house. She's playing basketball with her son, and then her friend Brene comes, and they seem to move, like, actual living room armchairs outside to sit on the tarmac and, like, drink champagne and chat on.
I mean, I kind of love this flex. It was like
they were full-on upholstered armchairs that they, like, maneuvered out of the living room.
I mean I love them for this. I love that it was, like, clearly the middle of the day and they were just like, yeah, let's drink some champagne on the tarmac.
Oh, I'd be drinking champagne in Charisse's situation. So we learn that Charisse and Eddie are self-made. And this was a moment of actual humanity for Charisse, where she says she wishes she could go back to the early days of their marriage, where their relationship with each other was a lot better, even if it meant having less of the finer things in life.
I know. And I actually, like, super warm to her in this scene as well. Like, I've kind of found Charisse really unlikable so far, and, like, I find, like, there's not been anything where I kind of felt like I could sort of, like, get an emotional read on her, but this was actually really sad, and it was really sad seeing her kind of fall apart about it.
Yeah, I feel that I think this whole episode was redemptive for Charisse in that you get some of the context, and, you know, people aren't rude or mean or nasty most of the time unless they have something that they're deeply unhappy about.
Yeah.
So I think when you get kind of the context of that, you start to understand kind of how she acted with Giselle and Giselle's friend, and you can kind of forgive it a bit more. And she kind of breaks down and she says that she feels like she's secondary to his job all the time, and that the life that she had pictured for herself with Eddie, or just in general, is not the life that she has.
I did love her friend's, like, wise as fuck sort of, like, commitment to this as well, where she was just kind of like, oh, your happiness is just as important as everybody else's. And I think that's something people don't hear enough of. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's so ingrained in all of us that we have to make other people happy before we kind of focus on ourselves. And I think it's so nice to be reminded of that occasionally, where it's like, your happiness is just as important as your husband's or your children's or your friends or your family's. And I think it's important that people kind of take ownership of that a little bit more and say, like, hey, do you know what? I'm not happy and that's not okay.
Yeah, I think so. I've been doing a lot of reading at the minute around this idea of, like, the nuclear family, because I'm reading A Pagan Theory of Sex.
Incredible.
as one does. And it kind of frames it in a really interesting way. And it kind of says that the nuclear family is not necessarily, like, a very healthy environment. You know, it's kind of held up as, like, the bastion of, like, this is what we should all be aiming towards, but that actually by its own design, by its own setup, there's kind of a lot of downsides. And I think that Charisse is a good example of a woman who is obviously putting her nuclear family, or, you know, very much wants to preserve the nuclear family unit, but to the detriment of her own kind of self-actualization or fulfillment. And it's about realizing that's not always the best way forward, you know, to just stay in something for the sake of it, because you know, she says, I want my family all together. And it's like, but if that family all together isn't going to work, you know, what is the next solution? What is the other way to resolve this for her to be happy again?
Yeah, I think that's, and we've sort of touched on this before, like we've both said about like relationships and kind of knowing when to get out and when they're not worth salvaging. And I think it's really hard, especially if you're married and you do have children. I think it's hard because in your head you think like divorce fucks kids up, or divorce is kind of like the worst thing, or separation and kids have to spend like time with one of us or the other, and like surely it's just better for me to be a bit miserable but have our family and our kids together and stuff. And I understand that thinking, but I also just think kids actually suffer more from like a really dysfunctional like household environment than they would from a healthy separated one.
The amount of my friends' parents who stayed together until their kids got to like teenage age or went away to uni, and who really put them through the ringer, you know, for the last few years, rather than just calling it a day when it was a lot earlier on and a lot healthier too. There's a lot of examples of that. And I agree with you. I don't think that it's like necessarily better together.
No, definitely not. And I think especially if you have like a really particularly dysfunctional relationship, like I don't think Charisse and her husband do necessarily. I think they just have a very distant one, which is just as sad, but like in a different way. But I think it's really interesting. So I was interviewing like a therapist, like a relationship therapist and things like that, for an article. And she was saying like women have this thing that's ingrained into them where it's better to fix something than to start again. And like people always have this thing of thinking that it's like almost like if you're building a house, like surely it's better to just like keep painting over mold or, you know, fix the foundations and things like that, rather than just like calling it quits and getting a new house. And I think that's kind of something where it's like, I'd never really thought of it like that, but I was like, yeah, it is. Like we always kind of think, you know, surely we can fix this, or maybe if there's something that I can change or they can change, and it'll, you know, surely there's something that can make this better, because it seems less terrifying than just starting over again.
There's also this idea of like sunk cost, right? You think, well, I've been with this person for X amount of years, so, you know, if I leave, then those years have been wasted.
Yeah.
Whereas absolutely. My mum always says, because she, you know, met my dad a bit later on and, you know, had relationships, had another marriage. And she always says, you learn more about yourself and about the world from the relationships that don't work out than the one that will.
Yes, that's so true. I think that's a really good perspective of it.
She's so wise.
I know. I love her.
Love her. Love her. Miss her. So we then go on and meet Giselle's husband, and like, okay, this is not who I pictured when I heard pastor. I was thinking like some ill-fitting light gray suit, button-up shirt, maybe like a cheap satin tie. This guy looks like a complete rock star, and he is gorgeous.
I know. So I felt like a little bit in love with him during this scene. He was not what I was expecting at all. Like I was expecting him to be kind of stuffy and not like funny, and he was such a good time.
And then when they cut to him doing that interview on TV, I was like, love the tie. It was like a really funky like green graphic, yes. 60s print.
Oh my god. And like he just seems like such an all-around like good person. Like obviously he's like making all these like big speeches about like important rights and that sort of thing, and like using his platform, and I was like, yes, why did you have to cheat on her? He would be like the perfect husband otherwise.
Oh, I know. And they seem to have a really cute rapport, but yeah. I definitely still think there's like physical chemistry between them as well.
I think so too. I also, I have to say, I found he had like a really soothing voice.
Yeah, you can see why people would listen to him preaching for sure.
Oh, 100%. It was that kind of voice where you just be like, never stop talking to me.
But, you know, Giselle's like, look, if I wanted to be back with him, he'd be here right next to me. But she's enjoying her singledom. She's not keen to kind of reignite anything. But they, again, seem to have a really nice and healthy co-parenting relationship.
Yeah, and I think that's really good. And it's exactly what we were saying, where it's like, clearly those kids aren't going to be suffering because their parents are divorced. Like, they obviously, they're just getting a really good sort of perspective of what healthy boundaries and a healthy relationship is.
I know. Oh, Jamal, why do you have to cheat?
I know. What is it with these men? Why
but
do men
also, cheat? You can tell that, like, wherever he goes, women are going to be like, hey, because he
absolutely.
He is a very handsome man.
He is exceptional.
So I love how committed Karen is to her, like, new hobby in the skies. She's finally feeling vindicated because she's got a hunky male instructor. And so they get in the plane and they fly. She's on a total power trip in this light aircraft. We get some lovely aerial views of Potomac.
I so wish we'd got, like, an actual shot of her flying the plane, though.
Do you think she actually did?
No.
Because they surely would have shown that.
I know. I feel like they could have put, like, a little camera up or something. But I feel like, I'd like to believe that she did. But also, I'm like, I think you probably just sort of sat there while the pilot did the most of the work.
I mean, my ex always says, always said, you could fly a plane. Like, he was like, I could take it up there and then I could just hand you the controls. And, like, you it's hard to mess up, like, once you're kind of level and at altitude. And he always said he'd take me and then he never did, which is annoying, rude. But probably best, because I've never been in charge of a vehicle that I haven't, like, crashed. So.
Oh, no, Lou.
But yeah, I also would have liked a GoPro moment for this.
I would as well. Like, I mean, I don't think I could fly a plane. I think even if it is the easiest thing in the world, like, I get anxious still driving. Like, I passed my driving test like 10 years ago, 11 years, nearly 11 years ago. And I still get, like, anxiety every time I'm driving.
Yeah, I've committed to not learn. Self-driving cars are coming. It's fine. And then also this way, I always have to live in a city centre. So I can always just be like, oh, guess I can't be that remote.
I mean, that's such a true perspective.
So we go back to Katie and we learn that Andrew was a really diplomatic actor in the ashes of Katie's separation, which is really nice.
I know.
Made me like him even more as a guy. Made me even more empathetic to him when she pulls this absolute madness later in the episode.
Oh God, I know. It really pained me.
And then she's talking about the nanny and she goes, she's a lesbian, which I love. Which is just, like, slightly off, but Katie is also bi, so I'm like, I guess that's not as bad a thing to say.
I know. I sort of had that same thing with this, where obviously, like, later we find out that she's bi, which kind of, I suppose, makes it sort of gives it a different context, you know, because my initial thing was like that she was going like, oh, which I love, because either it means that she's not going to hit on my boyfriend, or I just love that, you know, I'm really liberal and but from when she, like, said that she was bi, I was kind of like, oh, maybe she just means it in a context of, like, sort of solidarity and, like, support kind of thing.
Maybe it reminds me of that TikTok soundtrack that's like, I'm so progressive.
I mean, it very much had shades of that, didn't it?
Yeah, a tiny bit. And so Katie and the children have moved in with Andrew and she appears to be very much making herself at home, shall we say.
Oh God, so this just whole concept really bothered me.
Mistake, Andrew, that's all I'm gonna say.
I truly just took such an issue with the whole way she went about this. Like, she literally waited till he'd left town and then wheeled in those builders, just like, build me a glam room, put all his shit elsewhere.
We'll get to that. I have some thoughts.
I know.
So Karen calls Charisse and Charisse is in the big house by herself, and it seems to be quite late on at night, because initially we saw Charisse in her pajamas and I was like, oh, is this like a morning thing? But then Karen drives around and it's like pitch black. Karen looks fresh as anything. She's in stiletto heels, and they come and Katie and Giselle join for a little girly drink, a girly catch up.
Well, I think they actually did a close up of the clock in Charisse's kitchen. It was like 10 p.m.
Oh, did they? Oh, I didn't even see that.
But I just love that they literally all just sort of were like, yeah, we're doing absolutely nothing at 10 p.m. on what was clearly like a weekday or something. Like, let's come round and just drink.
Part of me does sometimes think, like, maybe being a housewife would be really fun. I was talking about this with my Zoom guy earlier this morning, because he was like, oh, I think I'd quite like to be a kept man. And I was like, I don't know if I could be a kept woman. Like, I've dated people who've, like, paid for everything for me, but I've never, like, lived with someone and not worked while they did that.
Yeah, I find it's one of those things where it's like, I had, like, a brief stint last year where I finished uni, but I was, like, really, really struggling to find, like, consistent work and that sort of thing. And I sort of ended up in that situation where it's like, Greg was paying all of our bills, and, like, whenever we'd go out, he would pay for everything. And you know what it is? I fucking hated it.
Yeah, I just get, like, guilt. And my mom, like, doesn't understand it. And she's like, oh, it's so sad. It's such a generational thing. Like, you know, that you shouldn't have to think about buying this, that, and the other. But it's changed. And that's just how the world is. And, like, I even when I was going out with, like, the multi-millionaire, I would, like, occasionally buy us dinner, because I would just be like, I don't want him to think that I'm doing this for the money.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if I'd feel differently if, for example, like, Greg was, like, a billionaire, and then I probably wouldn't feel as bad about him, like, buying me around at the pub. But I mean, he makes, like, decent money, and he made enough where he could, like, comfortably support us. But I hated not having that independence. Like, I hated that I couldn't just be like, oh, I'm gonna just go to, like, go to the pub with some friends, or I'm just gonna go, you know, really want this pair of shoes, so I'm going to buy them, or I want to, you know, have a rummage to a vintage shop. Like, I couldn't do any of those things. And then it kind of got into this thing of, like, asking for permission, which I hate. And it just kind of created this really, like, super weird dynamic. And my mom was the same. She didn't get it. She was just like, but, like, you're going to be married. Like, you split everything. Like, his money's your money. Like, your money when you have it is his money and stuff. And I was like, but it doesn't feel that way. It's like,
I don't think that's how it works anymore, because this is also my mum's thing, and it's like, she doesn't have basically really a bank account of her own, and, you know, she doesn't really know what the financial situation is. I can't ever imagine being in a situation where I didn't know exactly what was going on. You know, if someone left me, or if something happened, you know, from today to tomorrow, that everything would be like news to you, you know. Yeah, I hate that thought.
I do as well. I don't know if it's just because we're both a bit of a control freak, but like,
massively. I think it's such an only child thing, because you're used to, like, autonomy.
Yeah, everything's your decision, everything's up to you to decide and to sort of, you know, make kind of like choices with and that sort of thing. Like, it's up to you to get shit done. So I hate the idea of other people doing that for me, like, whether it's financially or just like in general.
Yeah, I went to the jewelers the other day because it just reopened, and I fell in love with a ring. Did I send you a picture of it?
No, you didn't.
Oh my God. Okay. So I fell in love with this ring. I saw it in the window, and it was a couple of £100. It wasn't like crazy expensive, but it was really, I was in such a bad mood, and I was like, do you know what's going to cheer me up? Diamonds. Always. So I bought it for myself, and like, I don't give a shit what anyone, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it. That's all it is. But imagine doing that and then someone being like, oh, I don't think that's a very good idea.
Yeah, like, I loathe that. Like, I've been in a relationship before where, like, everything I bought, like, with my own money, and, like, let's be clear, I was buying, like, secondhand trainers on eBay for, like, a fiver, or, like, going and buying, like, some vodka from the shop or something.
Yeah.
He would just, like, be at me all the time about what I was spending money on, and I fucking hated it. And I sort of carry a bit of that with me now. Like, I've been, like, heavy internet shopping since we've been in lockdown. And, like, there's literally, like, stuff arriving from, like, eBay and stuff arriving from, like, ASOS and things like that. And I almost feel, like, guilty when they arrive, like, Greg's going to judge me. And I said something the other day, and he was like, your fucking money, you've earned it, like, spend it on whatever you want. And I was like, thank you. Yes, I needed to hear that.
Yeah, because people do love to, like, put their opinion in where
it isn't warranted.
I think as well, because we're so British about money, and like, it's such a taboo subject, like, no one ever knows what anyone else's financial situation is. Like, you never talk about your salary or like whatever. I mean, the times that I've shared my salary with like men, it's never ended well.
Oh really?
Well, the guy that I was seeing earlier this year made less than me,
Right.
And was a few years older, and it seemed to really get to him. And I don't know if it was just other stuff and I was misreading it, but
he
suddenly became very arsy about like everything that was job related. So like I say, he kind of insinuated at one point that I drank too much, which I think is really odd, because that's just, that's not something that anyone's ever been like,
no,
you drink too much, like it's just not true. And then I kind of said, well, look, you know, I think I'm doing okay. Like, I'm lecturing at three unis at the age of 25. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like, if I was such an alcoholic, would that be the case? Well, I suppose it could be, but... and then he was just really, he was like, yeah, well, congratulations. We get it. Like, you're so impressive. And it was just so out of nowhere. Yeah. And I was just like, hang on, you're meant to like me? Like...
Yeah.
When you say congratulations, that's so impressive, you're meant to be sincere. You're not meant to be like
sarcastic.
Yeah, derogatory about it. So I kind of feel like it's best just to not talk about it.
Yeah, no, that sounds exactly like mine is always like my ex is always exactly the same thing as well. It's like as soon as I had like the smallest like modicum of success, it was like, oh god, you're so arrogant now. Like, if we get it, like you've done something. And I would just be like, sit the fuck down.
But it's just like, if you weren't genuinely threatened, you wouldn't have that response. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, if you were genuinely secure in who you are as a person, you would not be like offended or sort of like I don't know, like frightened by the fact that I've achieved something. You'd be really supportive and happy about it.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that I could think it could be, because quite frankly, you know, I didn't have anything else to like one up him on. Not that I would see it as that anyway. Yeah. He was doing really well in his career. It's just that his career happened to be less well paid than the like particular path that I'm in.
Yeah.
But you know, it was very odd to me.
It's men. Insecure men.
So Karen is on the sofa in her stiletto heels, and she calls them sock me pumps, which is possibly more terrifying than the original saying.
This is such like an unexpected thing from Karen as well. Like, I totally was blindsided by this.
I'm pretty sure they're studded like Louboutins. Now, what are your thoughts on lubes?
I think it's one of those things, like, obviously I'm not a big heel person. Like, I generally stick to like boots and flats and trainers and things like that. So for me, it's not as big of a deal as I feel like they get made out to be. And also I feel like when I've looked at them, apart from the super, super simple ones, they all feel a bit try hard. Do you know what I mean?
I don't like them. I feel like they're one of those things that got so kind of saturated that they're actually kind of like a horrible cliche, and they actually look cheap to me.
Yeah, I always think this as well, like considering the price of them, like I think they never look as expensive as they are, which, and I think it is down to a lot of like the fabrics and like the embellishments that seem to be on fucking everything. And it's like, just, it seems so unnecessary. Like, we can buy perfectly like much nicer, much better made pair of heels elsewhere. I don't know, it's I think it's kind of one of those things. I guess it's kind of like Hermes, like Birkin bags and things like that. And like, they've become such a cult thing that it's like people want them just because other people want them.
Yeah, it just screams sort of Dubai nightclub to me.
Yes, very much so. Like, there'll be a lot of like sequin dresses happening around. Oh,
it reminds me of when we first got to uni and we used to go out in Mayfair because it was free for girls to get in everywhere. And it was just like Hervé Léger bandage dresses as far as the eye could see. Yeah. Louboutin and like the little like Valentino rock stud shoes.
Exactly the same at ours as well. Like, every like when we had like proms and things like that, it was like literally everybody went hell for leather, like getting those rock stud shoes, getting Louboutins and things. And I literally went and spent £150 on a pair of like full diamante burlesque shoes because I was just like, I'm gonna be different.
Oh, love that. So Katie is like, oh, I have man feet. Katie has my size feet. She's like jamming them into Karen's foot, trying to make them fit. Oh, 7.5. Or US 10.5.
I don't feel like that's that bad. I think it sounds bigger in America. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're in double digits then.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I don't feel like they're that much bigger. I mean, I'm only like a six, do you know what I mean? It's not that far away.
It's just when I wear loafers, they look like flippers. But that should be a lesson to me not to wear loafers, to be honest, more than anything else. So we learn that Katie does in fact swing both ways. Giselle looks very confused by the whole thing, but you can tell she's like, be open-minded.
Yeah, you can almost see that like rhetoric going through her head, like, be open-minded, don't react, just smile, it's fine.
Like the internal dialogue, but her eyes are just like completely bulging. So this is where Katie reveals that Ashley has been Googling the ladies and looking into Robin's finances and the fact that their house is going into foreclosure. And Karen kind of comes to her defense a bit and says, well, maybe she just didn't realize that it was not the done thing.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Karen just thinks of everything in terms of etiquette rather than like morality. Like, I feel like any normal person knows that you probably shouldn't talk about that stuff. Like, you don't need to be, you know, the queen to know that you probably don't talk about that sort of thing. So I feel like Karen's giving her maybe a bit of an easy pass.
It's her only paradigm of understanding.
But I also just felt like this was a bit of like a bitchy thing for Katie to do. Like, I feel like she said it in quite a kind of catty, gossipy way.
Oh yeah, for sure. Katie is also a bit of a stirrer.
Is she?
I think so.
I'm starting to get that vibe from her.
I mean, you kind of start to get the vibe of just Katie being slightly unhinged in this episode. So Charisse opens up about her marriage and says they're at a bit of a kind of decisive moment. She says that things have been bad between them for about 3 years, and we get this really nice, real moment of girlfriends comforting each other.
I love this little scene, and it made me just really miss having like a proper like girls' night, you know what I mean, where everything's like giggly and like you're a little bit tipsy and you kind of just have like really open, like honest conversations. Like, I miss that so fucking much.
It'll happen again. I don't know where, I don't know when,
but one day
we will meet again. We literally will meet again, like, for the second time. Oh god. I mean, from a very selfish perspective, right, I love a freshly divorced housewife, because when you get divorced, you kind of go through this whole process of like a total personal rebrand, but then you also have like a bit of instability sprinkled in there, you know. There's like a misplaced aggression that comes to the fore. So to me, it's kind of like a perfect recipe, which seems really cruel, but no. As a viewer,
I completely agree with you. And I think it is. It's like we all do it when we come out of like a relationship, and particularly like a long-term one. It's like we change our hair, or we go and like go wild and get something pierced, and we like try a whole new style of wardrobe, and like we just go into that kind of like complete self-absorption place, which I actually think is a really healthy place to have. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's really good to live in that kind of bubble for a bit of like, what do I want? Let's just do all these things that I want to do without anybody else's input.
Yeah, especially if she's had, you know, 3 years of not feeling like she's putting herself first.
Yeah, I think I truly love like that, like first kind of 3-4 months after you come out of a relationship, and you're literally just on this kind of like one woman show front of like, this is who I am and I'm happy. Love it. Truly love it.
So then we go to Ashley's party prep. She fully dresses like it's 2009. I've just written that she needs to be committed to skater skirts and wedges anonymous. I mean, when is the last time you wore a wedge? When did any of us last wear a wedge?
I mean, the last time I wore a wedge, I was maybe 13 years old.
Literally. If it's not a platform or a flat form, I don't want to hear about it.
No, I'm exactly the same. Exactly the same. And also, I kind of hate a skater skirt kind of vibe, especially when it's part of a dress.
I think it depends what's going on up top. Yeah. I think if it's like a high neck bishop sleeve moment up top, I could go for like an A-line skater skirt. But when it's literally just like a tight fitting bodice, it's a very outdated shape.
It is. And I always feel like they're kind of made of that weird sort of like neoprene material where they get really stiff and kind of like artificial looking, do you know what I mean? And I hate, yeah, not for me.
Oh, I remember in 2010 when we all lost our minds for like digital kaleidoscopic floral prints on scuba fabric.
Yes. and everything was like geometric and like mirrored and oh what a turn.
I'm so glad like romantic florals have come back.
It's much more my speed.
So she's drafted in some super sexy guy to get painted like a big cat, I think, and just to kind of generally walk around and be like living scenery.
I mean, I have so many conflicted issues with this. Like, I think she is really on the precipice of making this party tacky. Although later on when we see it, I don't really feel like there's that much of a theme at all.
No, I think the theme was taken very much as like a broad suggestion rather than a code.
But I also feel like she didn't really do much with the space or anything. It was more just like she expected people to just turn up in cat costumes and that would be it. And it's like she should have gone all out jungle theme.
Yeah, that would have been much cooler, I think.
Wouldn't it?
And like, there were a few things that didn't really add up with this party. Like, why wasn't there an open bar if Michael is so loaded?
Yeah, I found that really, really weird.
You at least put a couple of grand on the bar, surely. Because generally the venue hire is probably free. Like, if you can get enough people in a room, they will let you have that room. That's how it worked when I did my school reunion 2 years ago. Yeah. Because I knew this guy that had a bar in Brussels. I said, look, I'm going to invite X amount of people. We'll probably get about this amount of people. And he went, yeah, take the top floor. Like, I think it was like as long as we got like 500 euros worth of drinks in over the course of the night, it wouldn't cost us anything. And obviously we hit that like straight away.
I was going to say, and it's that thing people always think like, oh, that sounds like so much money. But it's like, if you think, for example, if a drink is like, what, £7 or £8, somewhere between 5 and 10 depending on what you're drinking, all you need is like 50 people to buy a drink, one drink,
and and most people will be buying multiples, buying rounds, buying shots, buying bottles.
Exactly.
So very strange. So we learned that Ashley met Michael when she was 22 and she's obviously turning 27, so they've actually been together like a reasonable amount of time at this stage.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I kind of didn't have much of a grasp of their relationship in the part, like from like context wise, so it's kind of nice to get a little bit of like history on them.
Yeah. And then we go to Andrew's house. Andrew comes back from his trip and we learn that she like redid a couple of rooms without asking him. Now this would drive me insane if I was Andrew. I would be so pissed off. He basically comes straight off the golf course and right into the Mrs. room.
God, that sign alone would be enough of a grounds for a separation if it was me.
It was just so demented.
I mean, it was hideous. Like, let's call a spade a spade. I don't know what they actually fucking did in that room apart from hang a mirror up and put a dressing table in it.
Yeah, why did she need contractors for that?
Yeah, like, get yourself a fucking delivery person. They'll probably do it for you if they pay them enough. Like, wild. Absolutely wild.
You can tell that he's like imploding internally. Yeah. Like he goes bright red. You can tell that he's just like, oh my God. Yeah. And then she's like, do you like it? And he kind of says like, oh, I'm just not sure about the drapes. And he's completely deflecting from the actual issue, which is A, that she redid two rooms without asking him in his own home when he went away for like 3 days. But then also the fact that that entire room is just another like extremely unsubtle signal that she wants to get married. And it's like, sir, just be real. Like, tell her what the actual problem is and tell her that it's not okay to, like, just assume that you can do that in someone else's house.
Exactly. I would be horrified. I would even be horrified if it was, like, our house. You know what I mean? Like, if we bought this house together and I came back and, like, Greg had just redecorated a few rooms that I loved and he just was like, no, I want to do them like this. And I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is a conversation we have. This isn't something that you just do on a whim because you don't like it.
You make such a valid point. I hadn't even thought about that. So we go to Ashley, and Ashley is looking like a leopard made out of lycra mated with Sandy from Greece for her birthday outfit.
That fucking outfit. It was monstrous. She could, considering it was her birthday, I feel like she should have gone like balls to the wall, all out with like a really, really like well-made, nice, flattering and like expensive looking outfit, and she basically threw on some like pleather leggings and leather print top, and that was it.
I mean, this is very she looked amazing in it, but because she would look amazing in anything. But I agree, it was very like cheap Halloween party as opposed to like lavish, opulent, sexy birthday.
Yeah, and considering it was like her birthday as well, do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like she was kind of like a half-assed guest's attempt at the theme rather than hers. Like, I feel like, you know, think how much like Sandoval goes for a costume and a theme for a bot, like a party that's not even his.
I would love to see Sandoval interpret Big Cat.
Oh God, can you imagine? He'd probably be on stilts again or some kind of like rolling contraption.
No, do you know what he would do? He would do Cheshire Cat.
Yes. Oh yes, that's so good.
Yeah.
Like super campy and like over the top. It would be incredible.
I love it. So we go to the venue for Ashley's party, and this gave me like serious Cats the Movie vibes. Because you've just got these actors that are dressed in body paint. Like, the anthropomorphic tiger with no hair is just so terrifying. It's very, like, it looks like you've just taken, like, a Slender Man, like, silhouette shape, and then you've just, like, whacked, like, a tiger skin on top of it. You know, like, digitally. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I know exactly what you mean. And I just thought this whole party just looked, like, tactastic. It was not the chic, glamorous birthday I thought it was going to end up being.
Then again, Michael is Australian, so
okay, yeah,
they're not renowned for their, you know, subtle taste and refined aesthetic.
Oh, God. It was just, yeah. It did not look like a party I would want to be at. And like you say, especially considering they didn't even do an open bar, considering the money. I mean, look, if you're a regular person who is tight for money, granted, an open bar can be pricey in some clubs, but if you are like a fucking millionaire, you can afford to put a couple of grand behind a bar.
Yeah, exactly. If you have money to hire like Mactors and paint them head to toe, you have money to at least fund the first hour of drinking.
Exactly. And I mean, these women were horrified and just the sort of sheer thing, like the look on their face as each one went to the bar and then got asked if they wanted to open a tab.
That was so awkward. You just cringe for them.
It was terrible. It was so uncomfortable to watch.
So Katie and Andrew are fully just trying to ingest each other's faces. Everyone else is sitting around.
I hate this kind of PDA. Like, I get it sometimes when you're like drunk and you're with like the person that you like or whatever. There's like a lot of chemistry and you kind of, you know, sometimes you can get caught in the moment, but I feel like people are pulling you up on it like every 10 minutes. Either just go home or stop it.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is with Katie is she's obviously kind of crazy, but she's also super hot. So you know that sexy sensuality is obviously making up for the sheer insanity of like the Mrs. Room, the marry me, you know. And so Andrew's got to enjoy that side of her.
I suppose. I mean, you've got to take what you can get, can't you?
So Giselle explains to Ashley why Ashley Googling Robin and kind of subsequently bringing up the discussion about her personal life was maybe upsetting or misguided. And Ashley apologizes and says that it wasn't her intention. Robin's pretty forgiving at this stage as well. She seems pretty open to just being like, oh, like, don't worry, we'll shelve it.
Yeah, I feel like Ashley does an apology good. Do you know what I mean? Like, she knows just how to play it. She knows what to say. She knows the right tone and everything. And whether it's sincere or not, it comes across as really sincere. So I feel like she knows just how to pull it back before people get like too pissed off with her.
Yeah, she definitely comes off as very, very sincere.
Yeah. Although I have to say, so in Robin's talking head bit, she looks stunning. But every event that she has been at so far, like, girl, what are you wearing?
Yeah, Robin's fashion sense is not so interesting. I think Giselle dresses quite nicely, bar the hats. But when she was laying out her potential outfits and she was wearing that, like, teal chinoiserie kimono, there were some cool prints going on that I picked up on there. But I feel like Robin is not a fashion girl, you know.
No, I feel like Robin just kind of goes, this is clean and it's on and it's fine. Do you know what I mean?
And again, like, because she's so pretty, like, everything's gonna look good. So
yeah, exactly.
at one point we cut to Katie and Andrew and she's just fully horizontal, like in the booth getting made out with.
She's practically like lying in Ray's lap at this point. You can see him literally trying to be like a really gentlemanly man, not paying attention to it.
Ray is trying to have his blinkers on.
I just couldn't get over them literally just like fucking laying down in that booth.
Like you say, it reminds me of like really, really like drunk club makeouts, the likes of which I don't think I've had since I was literally like 21.
No, literally.
I think you get to an age where you're like, if we're going to do this, like, let's do it at home.
Yeah. Let's go back to a nice, clean, comfortable bed where there's not a risk of being spilled on or lying in something sticky.
Yeah, exactly. As you dress better as well.
Yeah.
Watching Ashley blow out the candles for her 27th year and getting that car, me, was like watching like footage taken just before a disaster. I'm not going to say too much because obviously I don't want to spoiler anything.
Oh,
but
my God.
I was like, oh, girl. When she was like, I'm going to have a baby and do this and do that and it's going to be amazing. And I was just like, oh, honey.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
I mean, see in the preview what Michael does, that Giselle is like, yeah, we don't do that. White people can do that.
Yeah.
So all I'm going to say is that that's kind of the general theme.
Oh, God. Right.
Well, exactly.
Oh, no. I mean, so I also realised that this the next episode that's coming up is the one that I watched by accident at the start.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So, I mean, it's fine. I can go back and obviously rewatch it, and like now that I've got a better measure of the women. But this, I don't know why it just randomly jump started me at like episode 6 or whatever.
But oh yeah, it would be ep 5. Yeah. S1 ep 5.
But yeah, the preview came up and I was like, oh, now I understand the context a whole lot more. They were like talking about Katie lying down and making out with people. I was like, well, why didn't we get to see that? Like, why have they just jumped in here?
I really like Katie, but she is insane, and you can tell that she just gets away with it because she is like gorgeous, rich, you know, generally well put together, but she also goes down a bit of an interesting route, shall we say, because she makes like a cameo appearance in the latest series as well.
Oh really? Oh my God, incredible.
Yeah, and she's kind of gone a bit like cabin in the woodsy.
Oh god.
Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah, there was even that bit like at the end of the episode where she was just like in Ashley's new car and everyone was like, get out, what are you doing?
Yeah, haven't you been drinking all night at this point? Yeah. As well.
I mean, that car was very like my sweet 16.
Yeah, okay, so obviously this is my not so inner snob coming out, but I'm like, really, you're gonna buy the white version? Like, everyone knows that the white version is like the cheapest paint job that you can get. It's lazy, you know. If you're gonna get a funky car, I really think if you want to get a car that says look at me, get like an acid yellow or a lime green or a bright red. Like, do something interesting.
100%. All right, at least just go classic and go all black. Do you know what I mean? I think white cars, or like especially white like sports kind of designer cars, always just look so tacky compared to like any other color.
Oh, they get dirty so easily as well. Yeah. I was walking along the river the other day with my friend Amy and we were talking about something and I was like, oh yeah, the white leased Audi is like the siren song of the fuck boy. And as I said that, we literally accidentally walked past a white Audi with this like beefy Geordie guy in it, and the window was wide open. I was like, shit, because it was genuinely a completely unrelated discussion.
Oh my God.
But I was just like, okay, just walk fast.
keep going. That's incredible.
Oh dear. So you can follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, 2 H's on the Faith, and you can check out her writing work at faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Instagram at Lou G Rogers, and you can check out my website, louisarogers.net. We also have an Instagram for the podcast where we accidentally went viral with a picture of Scott proposing to Tinsley, to the point where we had multiple people sending us messages thinking that we were Tinsley.
So many lovely congratulations on that.
I just pretended they were for me, and I pretended it was about like getting out of bed this morning rather than being proposed to. But yeah, 130 followers, and we had I think like 600 likes on that picture, which is true madness.
It was insane. We still don't know what happened or how it happened, but thank you for that.
You gotta have faith in the algorithm. No Roni this week, so we'll talk to you same time Thursday next week for more Real Housewives of Potomac.
Bye.
And then we do the fade out thing, so we just keep talking like it's totally normal.